later on.
Perth's best morning show is here. Gary Adshead on Perth 6PR.
Alrighty, so last night, with a cup of tea and digestives, chocolate digestives in hand, I sat down and watched the ABC's Q&A, because I know that they were looking into all of the issues that we're being faced with at the moment, the stabbings that have gone on, of course, on the East Coast, the level of violence that is being shown towards women, with 27 women being murdered already this year by a partner or ex-partner known to them, and so on. And I watched with great interest, no doubt about that, when one of the people in the audience who'd been invited to attend, Vincent Hurley, he's a lecturer in criminology at Macquarie University. He's also a long-term police officer before that. He decided to have his say. Here's a slice of some of what Vincent told the panel of politicians and others.
How dare you go into politics in an environment like this when one woman is murdered every 4 days? And all you two can do is immediately talk about politics. That is just disgraceful. Is it any wonder frontline services aren't getting the money that they want? AUKUS cost $300 billion. Do you think the federal government could spare a couple of billion dollars, even $1 million, for the pastor here at the Wayside Chapel? Mm. No, you couldn't. You made the comment, we need to listen more. For God's sake, how long do we have to listen to politicians like you and the rest of you high-horsing about we have to have a royal commission, we have to do this, to get up here and say that we need to do this and we need to do that? Well, I think it's just, it's offensive.
All right, Vincent Early joins me now. Thanks for your time, Vincent.
Thank you very much, Gary.
I don't know what that's like hearing back, but look, you clearly, and just to put that into context, you had sat back and you had listened for quite some time, as particularly the politicians, Bridget McKenzie and the Federal Agriculture Minister, whose name's just gone out of my head.
Murray Watt.
And the New South Wales opposition spokesperson was there too. They were kind of back and forthing on what the best policies are. Clearly, when you were given the floor, the fact that they were discussing who had better policy, that really peeved you, right?
I couldn't believe, and I still can't believe, that politicians put politics first and people second. You know, when we have a national emergency, and they don't want to call it an emergency simply because it shifts the focus back onto the politicians and they don't want the focus on them.
Yep.
The fact that they had the arrogance and the to argue about politics in when a murder, look, what, in the last 24 hours, I think two people have been murdered in domestic violence. Mm. It just goes to show how out of touch they are. It's politics first for them, and it's us punters, the parliament on the street, second. So you, I was outraged.
Yeah, well, look, I was, because I genuinely thought that pollies that go into a debate like that know that they need to, even beforehand, come get together on a bipartisan sort of level and make sure that this is not about tit-for-tat stuff when they're on a panel in front of a real live audience. So I was a bit surprised by it, and I think you called them out. Can I just point out that you're a lecturer in criminology, but you did spend nearly 30 years in the police force. What was that like? And obviously you did have to deal with domestic violence situations all the time. Yeah.
So I worked in Sydney's outer western suburbs, which is a very low socioeconomic area. I was second to third generation unemployed, where domestic violence was predominantly the main cause of police work. I also did some work for the Australian Institute of Criminology, reducing domestic violence from 4 pilot sites back in 2007 in New South Wales. And just before I resigned from the police in 2012, I spent 3 years back out in Sydney's outer western suburbs, specifically trying to reduce domestic violence or making it easier for victims to deal with the trauma of it. So my background is a blend primarily of being a practitioner as well as, you know, being now academically informed about domestic violence. So I understand the nuances about, you know, the relationship between domestic violence, mental health, which I said last night, and the cause of drug and alcohol, how governments over the decades have patient dumped or divested their interest in these frontline services. And now, as if it's come as a total surprise that all these women being murdered, and they go, oh my God, this has been the case for decades. From 2007 to 2017, I think it is, the number of women who have been subject to physical or sexual violence, and these are not my figures, these are the federal government figures, has increased over 100%. Yet I doubt in that period of time, any government of any persuasion has increased funding for frontline mental health, domestic violence and drug and alcohol services 100%. I doubt it.
Okay. So, I mean, it's the question now that we are confronted with, and there'll be a national cabinet meeting tomorrow involving premiers and the prime minister. So the question, I suppose, is from your point of view, if I gave you a wish list, what's missing, mate? What's missing right now?
The first thing that should happen is that, and I said it last night, is that offenders, if they have a criminal history of violence or damage to property, and the first mention or relationship to a domestic violence matter comes up, they should automatically not get bail. Now, as I said last night, some civil libertarians and those in the legal fraternity will say, oh my God, that is outrageous. Everyone's assumed to be innocent before guilty, and I understand that. But what does the bulk of the Australian population expect? They want females to be safe in society. So what is the point of giving a man two or three times bail for domestic violence? So my first thing would be that they are not given bail. Now, we can't control what happens at court, but they are not given bail. A magistrate, the chief magistrate in New South Wales, and I could be a bit rusty on this, can issue a practice notice or warning to other magistrates to lift their game in relation to domestic violence.
Right.
So that's the second thing that can happen. Yep. Again, I'm a bit rusty on that, but I'm sure there is some type of judicial direction that can be given throughout the courts in New South Wales and possibly other states to lift their game.
Can I also just ask you, you know, from your point of view, at the end of the day, a person, and let's be blunt, a male person makes a decision they're going to go and do this. They may already be going to do it in breach of a VRO, etc., but they go and do it. I mean, we can't always stop that, can we?
No, and I don't think anyone is suggesting that that should or could be. It's just not physically possible. It's just not humanly possible. But we have terrorism laws in Australia that are called preemptive laws, and we've seen that where the federal police have the power to go and arrest an individual in anticipation of a crime. Now, if police get information that, or from a victim that they're going to be the subject of possible further domestic violence or even domestic violence, what is stopping the legislators to make these same preemptive laws for the police to go out and at least put a circuit breaker in for 48, 72 hours so the poor victims can leave their home? Now, they shouldn't actually have to leave their home. The offender should be the one to leave. But there's no way, no one's offering these solutions.
No, not hard and fast. I mean, I'm hearing you because, you know, the situation has been, you know, what you just said then, where a woman has a belief or had some information that something bad might be about to happen. Nothing is done until it kind of does happen, unless it's a specific. So what I'm trying to say is, unless it's a specific breach and it gives police the ability to go and swoop someone up. If it's just, look, this is what I've heard from my mother-in-law or whatever the case may be, that doesn't seem to get dealt with until it's too late. And there have been cases recently where that has been exactly the case.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And the case of Hannah Clark in Queensland, you know, in 2017, I think it was, I think after having read the coronial inquiry, her parents said there was no way anyone could have done anything about that monster, and I'm not going to mention his name, that did that. So, yes, it's not possible. But, you know, the politicians last night used these motherhood terms like we need, you know, a Royal Commission for gravitas. We need to speak to frontline workers. We need to, give money to those that know. Well, the people that are out there know there is insufficient immediate funding for those agencies to be able to do it. So the police in New South Wales, for example, have had the ability, and when I was in there, for at least 30 years for pro-arrest policy on right. domestic violence, right. and they do.
Okay.
So it's not the issue that the police haven't got the power. It's the fact that the government are letting down the generation. We talk about AUKUS, that $360 million, I think is maximum, $1 billion. Amount. Yeah. So what happens? They are planning for the future. Why can't the federal government put aside a couple of billion dollars and plan for the next 20 years to have a strategy in place to address men's anger management issues, domestic violence, mental health, and drug and alcohol? But they won't do that because it doesn't suit their election cycle.
Yeah, well,
they won't see a return on that investment. But they talk about infrastructure being a long-term issue. Like Bridget McKenzie last night before we went to air said, oh, I'm future-focused on the nation. And I sat down and I thought to myself, you're talking about concrete. What about the mums and the dads and the aunties and the uncles and your sisters that, you know, they are the future? It's not the infrastructure. It's the lack of government commitment to long-term generational change. But they won't do that, Gary, in my opinion,
all right.
because they won't quarantine that money for the future because for political reasons that it's not valuable.
I mean, here in WA, I mean, our state government's, you know, just announced only last week that they would put $96 million into new programs around domestic violence, etc. So they're throwing money at it. Do you think more money needs to go into the prevention side of it than the reactive side of it?
Yep, absolutely, for sure. This is going to be a generational thing. And I'm not that naive to think that it's going to be changed overnight. You know, I spent 30 years in the police dealing with thousands of domestic arguments. So I understand, you know, the complexities of it. But that money, I mean, what I'm just gobsmacked about is that this is not a recent phenomenon. This is not something that's cropped up overnight. It's been going for decades. Mm-hmm. And governments have chosen to either not put the money there or ignore it. And now all of a sudden it's blowing up and the poor people that suffer are, of course, the children of the parents or the mum that has been murdered. So that is that $96 million, I think it was, that you said is a great start. But that will run out. That will run out possibly at the next election or the following election. So what happens after that?
Well, I think one thing's for sure, mate, that the Prime Minister has said on the national stage that more needs to be done. We will see what comes out of that National Cabinet meeting as to see whether they really mean it in terms of hard and fast ideas around how to save one life, two lives, three lives, I don't know. But that's what we need to see, hard and fast. You were right about a Royal Commission. Yeah, sure. Let's just get a bunch of lawyers and advisors in and pay them lots of money to run a Royal Commission. That's not the answer, is it?
No, it's not. This is just a waste of taxpayers' money. Everyone knows what the issue is. Everyone knows what the problem is. And I felt like saying to the opposition leader last night, the New South Wales opposition leader, when he's talking about a Royal Commission, I thought to myself, I could send you, you know, 20 links to immediate reports about domestic violence. And it's just unbelievable. Anyway.
Vincent, I appreciate your passion. I thank you very much for coming on the program.
Pleasure, Gary. Good. Thanks very much.
No problem.
Bye-bye.
Vincent Hurley there. Yeah, caught my eye last night. What about yours, 133-882? What do you think about what he said there? I mean, it is true that, you know, you've got to go back to the basics of how a person on so many occasions, a male person in these instances, is able to be out on bail or be under some kind of order or restriction and do this. And commit the crime, the ultimate fateful crime, as opposed to saying, no, Sonny, one strike, you are in, because we're not going to take a chance on that woman's life. We're not going to take a chance on it. You're in. You're in the bin. And, you know, I wondered around something like whether or not magistrates here are willing to put people like that detainee inside after breaching curfew because of the concerns around the space inside our prisons. Well, I'll say this. I would rather they build another prison than another train station right now, if that's the issue. 133-882. What do you reckon? Trish is on the line. G'day, Trish.
Hi. I just wanted to talk about the fact that politicians aren't chosen for their skills in managing this sort of thing. They're chosen because of their perhaps good looks and the fact that they might be able to round up a few new members, but they're not chosen and put into positions in government that give them the skills. Who do you know in government that could actually manage something like this?
Oh, well, you know, I mean, if they want the job and they run for the job, then they should be able to do it. It's about what we just heard Vincent talking about, hard and fast decisions, ones that won't be popular in some sections of the community, but ones that have to be made because we can't allow a woman to be killed every 4 days. You know, we do need to look at other countries and what they do. I mean, just talking about that detainee situation. I mean, what a farce. What an absolute farce. I mean, here we are. We've got a system where, okay, someone's stateless. They come here, they're stateless. They want asylum. We don't give it to them. We give them temporary visas. We give them bridging visas, whatever the case may be. Then they go and commit a crime. Isn't that the point where you say, well, sorry, Sonny Jim, but you've blown it. You're going to sit in Nauru for as long as it takes for us to work out what to do with you. Go and park your bum there because we don't want you on our mainland. I mean, we do it when a boat arrives and we don't know the origins of the people and what they're claiming. They go and get put on Nauru. So people like this who blow the opportunity to live a peaceful life in our country. I'm sorry, but there is a solution. It's flying them to Nauru and leaving them there until we know what to do with them or someone's prepared to take them. That's what I think, deep down. Genuinely, that's what I think. There are people that do not deserve that second chance. 133 882. We'll be back after this.